This month on State of the State, we check in on the economy and politics with fresh survey results. Welcome to our monthly discussion of context and evidence to inform Michigan policy debates. I'm Matt Grossman, political scientist and director of the Institute for Public Policy and Social Research. And I'm joined by co-hosts Dr. Charlie Ballard, economist and director of the State of the State survey, and Arnold Weinfeld, our associate director and MSU's director of urban policy initiatives.
So our latest State of the State survey is out. Charlie, tell us about Michiganders' perceptions of the economy, the president, and the governor.
Well, their sense of the economy is pretty good, with high percentages saying that their situation is good, more than 60% saying that they think they'll be even better off in a year. So generally favorable. This is not quite as good as the numbers that we had in 1999, which is the highest readings that we've had, and around 2000, 2001. But much better than we had, say, 7 or 8 years ago. So you might think that that would translate into happy assessments of their elected leaders, but that is not the case. Now, President Trump actually had a slight uptick from our previous survey, but he didn't yet make it to 30% favorable. For the president and the governor, we ask, do you think they're doing excellent, good, fair, or poor? And if you add together the excellent and the good, that's our measure of favorable. And President Trump had 29.7% favorable. Governor Snyder, 26.3% favorable. Which is, he used to be in the 30s. He's now dropped fairly consistently into the 20s in the last few years.
So there's, they're both in the high 20s, but there's a difference in polarization between them, right?
That's right. It's historically been true throughout the entire time that we've been asking the question about Rick Snyder. He gets a lot of people who say fair. That sort of an intermediate category, whereas 49%, more than 49%, 49.4, said that President Trump, they gave him a poor rating. So Trump also has more excellent than Snyder, but more poor, and Snyder has more fair. So Trump, a lot of people either really like him or really don't like him. Snyder doesn't evoke quite such strong visceral responses.
And how do those numbers compare to previous governors such as Granholm and Engler, or even for Trump, previous presidents?
Well, it's interesting that we've had a tendency, and this may be borne out with Governor Snyder, we've had a tendency that we like governors for a while, but then our love for them seems to diminish over time. And John Engler's lowest ratings ever in the low 30s were during the last time that we surveyed before he left office. Jennifer Granholm then came to office with a burst of enthusiasm, and she had numbers in the high 50s for a while, and they declined and they declined and they declined. And her final survey before she left office was her lowest at about 17% favorable. Now, Rick Snyder, in his first time, he was 44%.
So he's never been over 50.
He's never been over 50. He's been over 40 twice. Most of the time, he's been in the 30s. But then what it looked like, if you can ascribe it to any particular event, the Flint water crisis seems to be the thing that pushed him down into the 20s, because he was consistently in the 30s, and then following the breaking of that big story, he's been consistently in the 20s.
Never been over 50, but winds up being a two-term governor.
That's right. Now, what would you put that to? I guess what it says is you don't have to be extraordinarily popular to win.
Right.
You can't. I think you can't win if you're super unpopular, but...
It also matters when you're running.
Right.
And
exactly.
Rick Snyder's had the benefit of running in the two midterm elections when President Obama was in office. And people, even in state elections, tend to kind of vote up or down on the party of the presidency. And so it is the case that the governor's approval rating now should matter for the 2018 election. But if history is a guide, the Trump approval approval rating might actually matter more, even for the state election. So we have this idea that people might know something about what's going on in Lansing and vote up or down on that. But it actually turns out that a lot of people just show up and make a partisan decision based on how things are going nationally. So the Trump rating might even be more concerning to Republicans than the Snyder rating. Mm.
That's very interesting. So that would suggest if you're a Republican, you really don't like to see this 49% negative, 49% giving President Trump a poor rating. Because if that spills over into the 2018 midterm elections, that would be not good news for Republicans.
Right, right. Well, there's one who believes that all politics is local. I think it still is going to depend on the candidates that are recruited by both sides, their experiences, and how the public at the local level feels about them. I mean, if the economy is doing well and people feel that their pocketbooks are in good shape, I was once told that people vote on two P's, their pocketbooks and their prejudices, and that also could be a reason why, despite the fact that Mr. Snyder's never had a rating above 50%, he was reelected in a midterm as well.
I should point out that in this survey, we did not screen for whether people are likely to vote. And one thing historically is that groups who tend to vote Republican in many cases turn out with higher probability, higher percentage than groups that vote Democrat. So what that might suggest looking ahead to the elections in November, that might mean that even though these ratings of the Michigan adult population are not that favorable, perhaps the group that shows up at the polls might be a little bit more inclined to vote for Republicans. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's sort of two different trends there. One is that those demographic differences in who turns out are getting more favorable to Republicans because they're getting there's a bigger age divide than there used to be, and age is one of the biggest determinants of turnout. On the other hand, some of the turnout difference, especially in midterms, is driven by who turns out among those who've just voted for president. And we tend to see what we call surge and decline, which is that you see a surge in new voters for the winning presidential candidate. And then those are the people who are most likely to drop off in the next midterm. So we saw that in 2010 and 2014 for Obama. So it'll be interesting to see if we see that for 2018.
So if there was a group of voters who were motivated to come to the polls to vote for Donald Trump in 2016, if history repeats itself, they may be less likely to show up in 2018.
That's right, especially those new people who were specifically motivated by
Trump.
The
ones who really were not typically coming to the polls, but then there was something about the Trump candidacy that brought them out. We might not see them in 2018, although we'll see. I'm sure that both parties are going to be paying a great deal of attention to turnout, because if they can get their supporters to turn out, and if the other side doesn't, that makes a big difference.
And we know that turnout in 2016, Democratic turnout anyway, in Michigan in 2016 was depressed from previous presidential elections. So it is going to really matter on turnout, especially given the fact that Trump won by 10,000 votes in this state. So
yeah.
So let's delve into the economic numbers a little bit more. Is it the case that everybody's happy, or just those that are making the big bucks, is there still signs of potential trouble?
There are big differences among different groups in terms of how happy they are about their situation. We asked your current financial situation: excellent, good, fair, not so good, or poor. And overall, for the state as a whole, about 58% said either excellent or good. That's not the best rating that we've ever had, but it's up there. It's pretty favorable. And 11.5 said either not so good or poor. But men are 9 points ahead of women in terms of excellent or good. 62% of men said excellent or good, only 53% of women. Maybe not surprisingly, big racial gap 61% of whites, 39% of blacks said that their own situation was excellent or good. Although note that both for the men and versus women and for the blacks and whites, there's not much of a difference in not so good or poor. The big difference is it's not that there are more women or more blacks who say they're doing badly. It's that there are a lot more men and whites who say that they're doing really well. One of the things that I've always found interesting when we do this survey is we ask the household for an estimate of their income. And as you might expect, there's a big breakdown by income. 92% of those with a household income over $100,000 say that they're doing either excellent or good. But 2% of those say that they're doing not so good or poor. And I'd actually like to meet those folks and say, okay, your income is $120,000, but you say your situation is poor. Well, can you explain that to me? You know, this is not a focus group. We just ask closed-ended questions in most cases, and so we don't know why they said that. On the other hand, at the other end of the spectrum, only 22% of those with income below $20,000 said excellent or good. 39% of those said not so good or poor. But again, if you're below $20,000, I'm actually surprised that that many of those
22%,
folks, 22% yeah. said either excellent or good. So I think a lot of this probably depends upon what you're used to, you know.
It's also getting harder to separate these attitudes from political opinions. We try to do that by asking the economic questions first and doing the broad-based survey. But it turns out that even your views of the current economic situation are very much tied to politics. We just saw a funny version of this a week before the 2016 election. Democrats were much happier about the economy than Republicans. A week after the 2016 election, presumably no big economic change, Republicans were much happier with the state of the economy. So it is possible that people answer some of these questions a little bit expressively. I'm just down, so everything's bad, or I'm feeling pretty good, so things are improving.
Yeah. I guess this is just another way of saying that survey research, there are a lot of paradoxes and a lot of ironies in what we find in our data.
Now, did we find anything different between how people are feeling about how things have been and how things will be, or any of our other economic indicators, or did everything pretty much go together?
Well, things do tend to move together in that we ask, how are you relative to a year ago? How are you relative to a year from now? How do you expect to be a year from now? And how are you currently? And all of those have tended to move together over time. All of them surged upward in the late 90s, then floated downward a little bit in the early 2000s, and then plummeted during the Great Recession and the year or two after that. And all of them then rebounded, and then in recent years have been kind of flat. I already gave you the numbers for current financial situation.
But people are usually a little bit more optimistic about the future than current, right? The brighter tomorrow is always ahead.
That's right. We asked people, are you better off than a year ago? And 46% said that they're better off than a year ago. We asked, will you be better off 1 year from now? 63% said that they would be better off a year from now. And that is a trend that we have found consistently during the entire 24 years of this survey. People are optimistic about the future. And I actually think that's a good thing. I like it if people think that the future is going to be better because, of course, if you think the future is going to be miserable, that makes it even that much more difficult to get out of bed in the morning.
And, Charlie, is that justified in Michigan at the moment, that people are more optimistic about the future economically?
Is it are you asking me for a forecast? are you asking me for a prediction? Okay, I'll quote my favorite quote about predictions from Yogi Berra. It's tough to make predictions, especially about the future. The economy right now has considerable momentum. The metaphor that I use is that in 2009 our economy was in reverse. And then for several years, we were sort of in second gear. Now I would say that the economy is clearly in third gear at least, and maybe in fourth gear. I mean, we are if we're not at full employment, we're very, very close to full employment. After several years of sort of sluggish movement, household incomes grew noticeably in 2015. They grew again in 2016. We don't have the complete data for 2017 yet, but everything looks like household incomes will continue to have increased in 2017. So 3 years in a row of fairly good growth in household incomes, even after adjusting for inflation. So right now, if I were to say, where will we be in 6 months? Likely to be pretty good. Of course, things can happen, and especially things can happen in the international arena, over which we here really have no control. An example of that is that in 2011, there was this earthquake and tsunami in northern Japan. That messed up the entire North Pacific supply chain, and it had noticeable effects on the American economy, even though, you know, nobody correctly forecast the earthquake.
But at the end of the day, you can see from what you're saying why someone's attitude about where they're going in the future being optimistic again is justified. I mean, we've seen 3 years of wage growth. As you said, the economy is doing very, very well. So you put all those together, and that 63% thinking that they're going to be better off next year, you know, they can see lights at the end of the tunnel.
I think that's right. And I think that at least some optimism is justified. You know, I, as the economist, I always want to put the footnote and the caution that predicting the future is very hard. And, of course, there are things that I worry about. The recent tax cut, basically when the economy is already in fourth gear, it's not necessarily good to stomp on the accelerator, because that could lead to some overheating if that happens and we start seeing really noticeable signs of inflation. Almost certainly the Federal Reserve will react with raising interest rates more aggressively than they would otherwise. That leads to all sorts of difficult issues in terms of how the economy is going to evolve over the next few years. But at least for now, the economy certainly has momentum.
Now, we should point out that our survey ended in January, so it doesn't pick up anything that might be changing lately with stock market volatility or anything else. But it does seem, getting back to Arnold's point about the pocketbook and the prejudices, that at least the pocketbook voters will have some reason to go along with the current party in power at the presidential and the gubernatorial level. Now, we went back and analyzed our data from the 2016 election, and it did turn out that people who were feeling better about the economy were more likely to vote for the Democratic candidate. But it also, to get that other PN, turned out that people who had more negative opinions about immigrant groups or other racial and religious minorities also tended to be more supportive of Donald Trump. So both of those factors were at play. Any prediction about whether we'll have overall social views or pocketbook matters making more of a difference now?
I think, again, getting back to the politics, all politics is local. I think especially in midterm elections, in the congressional races, for instance, I think the social issues will play a larger role than in state legislative races. I think economic issues are of more importance for statewide candidates. So it is going to be interesting to see what happens, because right now you're hearing, at least from the Democratic side of the ledger, the notion that, you know, the economy is not doing that well, that we are leaving people behind. And that was going to lead me to a question, Charlie, about wage growth. So we've had 3 years of wage growth. You know, Michigan used to be a top 10 state in per capita income. So we've seen 3 years of wage growth. Can you tell us where we are right now in terms of per capita income in our state?
The latest data that we have are for 2016. And in that year, we ranked 30th among the 50 states in per capita income. That compares with before the crash, we were 21st in 2004, and we were 37th at the bottom in 2009. So we've been on something of a roller coaster. We've inched upward in recent years, but we haven't raced forward. I think it's entirely appropriate, as you say, to think about not just average. What I've been talking about mostly is per capita or average income or median household income. Well, that tells you something about the economy, but it doesn't tell you about how everybody's doing. And it is true that, in my view, one of the biggest phenomena in the economy in our lifetime, maybe the biggest, is the huge increase in income inequality, with so much of the income growth of the last 40 years going to those at or near the very top. And so I think that is likely to be a point. That's typically a point that Democrats raise, saying, yeah, okay, these tax cuts may juice the economy, but what did they do for the average citizen?
Right. And I think that's reflective of Michigan's history and culture and slow pace in adjusting to a knowledge-based economy as compared to an industrial-based economy that we've had in the past. You hear a lot about that. Yesterday, the governor came out with his Marshall Plan for talent, and I think that from all of the candidates I've heard so far, talent is definitely an issue that they're going to be focusing on. So it's going to be interesting to see how their actual policies and policy recommendations move forward as we get into the campaign.
The lieutenant governor is certainly touting the Michigan comeback, as he calls it, and the governor does in the economy. But of course, he's running in a primary now against the attorney general, who's seen as closer to Trump and not as close to the governor. Either of those strategies more likely to work among Republicans or among the general public? Is Trump the better standard bearer for Republicans in our survey and worse for the general electorate?
You know, again, making predictions is tough, but my sense is that among the committed Republicans, the ones who are most likely to show up at a primary, that the Donald Trump brand is very, very important to them. And that might end up being a good thing for Bill Schuette and maybe not so much for Brian Kelly, although we'll see. I mean, much remains to be seen, and there are many, many steps on which either of them could stumble between now and the primary.
Well, the good news is that we also have some survey data covering the governor's race and covering the initiatives. And so we are going to be able to share some of that with you on our next version of State of the State. Anything you want to leave our listeners with from the current discussion?
I guess to summarize what we've had from this latest survey is that people are generally upbeat. Not everybody, but overall, the public is fairly upbeat about the economy, but not very enthusiastic about the president and the governor.
Which would hold that they haven't been very upbeat about their elected officials, especially on the state or federal level, for some time. So,
yep, we'll see if that changes.
we have a high bar, despite the high economy, still pretty negative on our elected officials. We'll leave it there for now and hope you join us next time on State of the State.